Now we turn our attention to our regular feature at this time, and that's our roundtable. We're joined today from our Chicago Bureau by Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist at member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University, and finally George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. Laura, let me go to you. You heard what Jack Kemp had to say there. There are, though, in spite of him suggesting there shouldn't have been raised eyebrows, there are raised eyebrows, and many people, and perhaps many's a bit strong, there are a good number of people who suggest that this should not be the case, that this should be part of punishment for committing a felony.
Well, the raised eyebrows are coming, of course, because Jack Kemp is a Republican, and in some cases a conservative Republican, and we're such a divided society. We're always pleasantly surprised when people take positions that are surprising. I think one of the reasons he's probably come to this point of view is because in his period as HUD secretary, he probably saw much of the devastation in our community, especially in the public housing community, and the lack of, as he says, incentive. I have to correct him on using the term incentive for civilized behavior. He repeated civilized several times in your conversation, or a couple times. And I don't like that word. I think many of ex-felons who are back out on the street who are trying to make lives for themselves are indeed civilized people and don't need incentives for it. But having said that, I think that the opposition is about politics, the opposition to including felons and allowing them to vote. These are probably, if they do vote, and we have to be concerned about the issue of voting overall in the community, but if they do vote, they're likely to vote Democratic, and Republicans and conservatives don't want to see that happen.
Mm-hmm. Nat?
I think it's important to point out that Kemp, this doesn't surprise me at all about Jack Kemp. Kemp has always been kind of a maverick Republican in a sense that, yes, he's conservative, but he's also had a lot of outreach to Urban League, serves mm-hmm. on the national board, as a matter of fact. So this doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's important that he's making these points, and I think it's an important issue that we deal with.
I think, too, George, that as you pointed out about Jack, his voice in the Republican Party has been the one voice that's been missing. I mean, you know, he's a guy who has who championed the idea of enterprise zones. That was a very important initiative for would-be black business folk in the 80s and the 90s. I mean, just in creating the whole idea of opportunities between the Republican Party and the black community. I think what Jack Kemp recognizes, and I also think that he's part of a growing trend among politicians, Republicans and Democrats, less Republicans, more Democrats, and that is for felons to have their voting rights restored is a win-win for everybody. I mean, what we have essentially by having a policy as it stands now is that you're punishing the next generation of would-be voters. How can that possibly be good for the rest of America? How could it be good when a person makes a mistake at age 18, gets out of prison at age 25, wants to start a family, wants to encourage his children to become good Americans, but he can't vote for the next 40 years? How much sense does that make? It takes a while for the country to recognize sometimes that policies that initially look like they're going to punish, the offenders, which may in fact be somewhat of a deterrent on the, going in. But long term, the implications turn out to be have the opposite impact. And I think that's why, whereas Kemp may have raised a few eyebrows, I think generally he's on the right. He's ahead of the curve that most people are starting to recognize, even Republicans who think that if black people happen to be, who the ones we're talking about here today, the ex-felons, that they would be more Democratic. I don't know if that's the case or not, but still, I think that in general, people are going to recognize this is a win-win for everybody.
Hey, George Curry, Nat Irvin touched on it, and the idea of many political watchers looking for the wistful days of someone like a Jack Kemp, who can be to some degree painted as a hardline conservative, yet in other areas will be willing to be moderate enough to compromise with a Democrat and work hand in hand, really looking at urban areas and African American and other minorities as vital to this country. Is he a dying breed, do you think, politically?
I wouldn't say he's a dying breed. I say he's a dead breed. I mean, if you look at the Republican Party, you look at the voices that were there, the Lord Weickers, the John Lindsays, these are people who can bridge those gaps. Jack Kemp is a person, even though he's conservative, he's a person who can bridge those gaps. But that voice in the Republican Party has basically been chased out of the Republican Party, is captive of the far right, and that's why they're not able to expand their base and certainly into the black community. Kemp is a kind of bridge maker who can help make that work, but he's a rare breed.
Laura, is that the same true on the other side of the aisle? There will be those who will think back to, for instance, you know, the days of Hubert Humphrey and others who were, again, hardline liberals, but occasionally would reach out and understand the importance of, if you want to just be stereotypical, big business and walking hand in hand. Can the same be said on the other side of the aisle?
Absolutely. I think George is absolutely right. We have just had two probably of the most divisive election cycles, 2000 and 2004, in the history of this country. We have a very deep divide politically, and there's very little room for folks like Jack Kemp to step out of the wilderness and to build those bridges. There are exceptions, of course, but I think that the environment is really against it. I also have to say that I think that because of the increased in criminalization and the increase in imagery and negativity that surrounds African-American men and who in many cases are represent the ex-felons is another reason why we're back to the Willie Horton days. And you remember the famous Willie Horton commercial that happened in a presidential campaign that, you know, and presented this image of the black man as the animalistic criminal. And I think that it makes it very easy to dismiss and to make a case to exclude these folks because we're in an era where that has become a very popular phenomenon.
So much attention.
But Laura, the trend, mm-hmm. I mean, looking at most states now, most states are considering revising their whole approach to this. I mean, we've had over the last 5 years more ex-felons now have the right to vote than ever before. I mean, the general trend is to reverse this process. And I also think in terms of the Republicans, you know, there is John McCain mm-hmm. out there. And I think it would be a mistake to just say that that the Republicans have just written off the black vote, or that the Republicans are just, you know, because right now we're in a period, as you pointed out, about extreme divisiveness. I don't think, though, that reflects the general direction of the Republican Party toward the black community. There's work to be done, but I don't think the black community has been written off by any means by the Republican Party.
I wasn't expecting any more from my friend Nat, who is part of that party.
George, can I respond to what Nat said?
Let me
finish.
All right, hold on. He did address it to Laura, and then you can follow up, George.
Okay,
go ahead, Laura.
Thanks, Ed. Yes, absolutely. The Republican Party, I think, really recognizes the importance of addressing the ex-felon problem. The ex-felon problem goes far beyond voting rights. It goes to access to jobs. It goes to access to drug treatment. Again, this is a stigmatized group. This is a group that is not participating economically in our society. And the bottom line, I think, and most Republicans really respect the bottom line, is that we have to address this. So, I don't disagree with you on that.
George?
Yeah. Well, this is why I disagree with my friend that. Look, you can say, look at all the outreach efforts that Republicans make, but you got to, in the end, look at their record. And when you look at a record and an NAACP reporting card, and you got in the House and the Senate guy one Republican who earns a C, and everyone else earns an F, not even a D, an F, you see people voting against your interests, then you know that they're not really serious about this and that. And those moderate voices I mentioned earlier have been chased out of the party.
Well, I don't have much to say about that because I'm not going to be doing Ken Melman's job today, I can tell you that.
All right. Well, good. Then since you don't have much to say, we'll move on to the next topic and do it very quickly. And that is a name that people are beginning to recognize, and that's Patrick Fitzgerald, who is the special counsel looking into that CIA leak we keep hearing about, and people suggesting that the White House is a bit nervous about how close this will come to Karl Rove, perhaps having to step down or even be dismissed from his post. George Curry, do you believe that, in fact, President Bush would, and we heard him say some months ago, when they find out who is doing these leaks, they will be ceremoniously or unceremoniously dismissed from this White House? Will this, in fact, in your opinion, happen to Karl Rove if he's indicted?
Well, he's been moonwalking away from that position, too, the president has. I think that Roe will be indicted. I mean, and I think that it has become such a distraction that he'll have to step down. I mean, I just really do, so that he can really concentrate on his own defense. This is a serious political problem because you got somebody who's guided George Bush's political career since his days back in Texas, and that would be a major loss for them, but I think that's what's going to happen.
You know, Nat, one of the interesting points here is we keep hearing about Karl Rove and all of this because, as George mentioned, he is known as the architect of the Bush presidency, but perhaps even more damning and damaging could be Scooter Libby's contribution to all of this and the connection to the vice president's office.
Well, that is the sort of the big kahuna out there, right? How close does it get to Dick Cheney? You know, I tell you what, though, Ed, I have a slightly different take on this whole Plumgate matter. I think whereas it is a big deal when two aides to the president and one in particular who reports to the vice president could possibly be indicted. There's no question about that being a major political issue. But you know what is the larger issue? And that is that we have now a plurality of Americans who think that this presidency, the Bush presidency, may in fact be a failed presidency. It's not just a matter of his low poll ratings, but in general, Americans are really concerned about the direction of the country. You know, the latest Pew polls show that and I think these numbers are extraordinary. 41% say in the long run that Bush will be an unsuccessful president. And that's just up 27% in January and the highest percentage expressing that view since he took the office. And when you take a look at how, you know, the president has led on the federal budget, when we look at the relationship between our country and our U.S. allies, many people think that we have made Bush has made things worse. In general, we just don't think that everything he puts his hand to now mm-hmm. is getting better. Just think that in general, we're going in the wrong direction. That, to me, is a much more larger issue. Okay, after this week, we find out whether the people have been indicted. We'll know yes or no. But no, still, what remains is, where is this country heading under this president?
Laura?
Now, I agree with you, Nat, but go ahead. I'm just going, Laura. I'm sorry.
The importance there is that Karl Rove has been the spin master of all spin masters. He's been able to take a lot of past failures, Iraq all the way on down, and spin them and turn them into at least neutrals, if not positive. And if you don't have a Rove around there, you don't have a Rove around to spin it, I think Nat's point about where the country is going is going to be even more obvious.
All right, George,
I agree with Nat, but another part of this is Judith Miller and her whole role, the role of journalists in this, in protecting these people. And also,
incredible.
Not only just protecting them, actually lying. Judith Miller agreed to say, identified the vice president, chief of staff, and said he's a former Hill staffer, so it wouldn't look like it came from the White House. This is
incredible.
Reprehensible. So that's also part of the story.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, though, and I won't take it to that degree, but when you and George, you've been there a long time and I lived there a long time, the idea of politics making strange bedfellows, even with the media, can sometimes be one of those things that you have to really watch and wonder about, and how many pawns, if you will, are in all of this game. It will be interesting to see how all of that unfolds as the New York Times, quite frankly, begins to step away from Ms. Miller to some degree. So that will be a story that is ongoing. Laura Washington joins us from Chicago. She's a Chicago Sun-Times columnist. Nat Ervin joins us from North Carolina, where he is a professor at Wake Forest University, and George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us today from Maryland. I thank you all, the three of you, for joining us. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.